Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and we're in the midst of reprogramming our program.
Why does 5 minutes go so fast? Why is 5 minutes when you're at the DMV take like 20 minutes? But yeah. 5 minutes when you're trying to fix something and...
Yeah, it turns into a 15-minute
I don't understand that.
Yeah.
Time travel is real, and we just did it. So anyway, we were trying to separate our guest from the music. You know how that goes. We were trying to do complex engineering tasks.
Oh, it's easy. Anybody can
do it. One person here is an engineer. We got two dopes with laptops.
Like, I don't think that's a good idea. We should do that right now.
And our friend Harry Boone's in Canada. So, you know, we didn't make it as hard as we possibly could have, but, you know, we were right up there.
No. I'm here. I'm not necessarily all there.
but you are all that. So, that being said.
Do you need to switch at this point, or do we go ahead?
We'll just keep.
Yeah, we're fine.
We'll just keep struggling along. But we've incorporated as many, this is like the Olympic gymnast routine. You know, we want to do the double hamel camel dismount. So we've got to,
we don't have enough math.
We got Skype. We got clips. We got video.
I'm pressing about six different things at once whenever we go to commercial. But we'll make it work. It's all good.
thank goodness you didn't have a snowblower when you were a kid.
Oh yeah, there goes a finger.
There goes a finger. Only East Coast kids get that joke.
just let me get this straight. You guys are entrusting your lives to a sound engineer?
Yes. And he's
please,
behind.
Please, don't tell him I'm smaller than him, okay?
Yeah, but he looks good
he
in
does.
There.
He does.
He's got all the gear. He's got the headgear.
He has a beard. What could go wrong?
Microphone, big board.
We all know guys with beards get more stuff done.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody in here's got a beard except me, thank goodness.
I'm a lumberjack in my spare time.
But do you know the song?
I want to be a lumberjack.
Hey, you're playing with Canadian wares now.
Exactly. But does he sleep all night and work all day?
Yeah, there you go.
And the high heels. Yep, it's all over but that. Hey, you know, I wanted to let people know, too. So we're going to do some more of these really helpful, actually, clips that Harry has provided to us. And I wanted you to know they were all online. So they're on the page for today at wethepeopleradio.us. So if you're actually listening to us on the radio or some other way and you're not actually on our webpage and you wanted to go back and see the full context of those clips, you can go play them. We added them for you on the page. So our guest, in case you missed the first hour, which would be silly and bad, but in case you did, our guest is Dr. Harry Boyens. He is a... PhD, obviously, which makes the doctorness, and he's a defense and aerospace physicist retired. I don't know if you ever retire from that, but just keep thinking big thoughts. And he is originally from South Africa, and his family bloodline stretches back 360 years.
Well, they actually made a movie about Harry. I think it was called The Farmer Astronaut. He's actually building a rocket in his barn.
There you go.
Yeah.
I should tell you guys that I was born sort of at the end of the Korean War, when Britain was still under food rationing, and 4 years later, my mom picked me up on her arm outside our house. And she pointed out a star that was moving, and she explained that scientists put it up there. And I went and believed her, and so I became a scientist. And now I'm heading for 66, and I've told her the other day that I'm mad as hell at her because she taught me everything I needed to know about life before I went to high school. But there's two things she told me nothing about. You know, the one is women, and the other thing is what happens to guys when they go over 55.
But did you sign up for the one-way trip to Mars? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, that's the truly inexplicable one. Oh, man.
So I covered the views of the so-called foreigners, the guys who are being attacked in South Africa right now. Mm-hmm. And next I thought I should treat the view of the attackers, because they presumably have a view. Now, I want to tell you the next clip, which is number 3, is... from a Sky News article of 2015, but it applies as much to right now as it did back then, because there's nothing new about the story, It's been happening repeatedly ever since about 2008. And there was another flare-up in 2015, another in 2017, another one now. They're just getting worse. That's the problem. Now, so clip three was a report by Sky News with a suitably blonde British reporter lady speaking to this bunch of guys. And I promise you, you do not wish to meet those guys in the dark, okay? So clip three.
These people, they work for 80 rand a day, 90 rand a day. It's fine for them because when you go to his country, it's a lot of money. But for us, it's too small. So we are no longer getting jobs anymore because of the salary we're looking for. You understand? These people, they are accepting small money. So they are ruining us in each and every side of ours. We attack them with knives, everything, machetes, man, because we are very, very angry because we can't accept that.
And what makes you think that's okay to attack another human being with a machete?
Because these people, if they attack us also, later, they use these things, they use guns.
They also blame the foreigners for the high crime rate, and their version of justice is meted out pretty quickly.
Paraffin is easy to catch fire. It's flammable. If I put it on the tire is what? It's catching fire.
And, put and you'll put there. This on the person.
And while we are beating you, you are very weak. I get you can't fight back. Even though.
Wow.
I'm not sure if that last bit was clear enough to innocent Americans. They're talking about what in South Africa is referred to as necklacing, where you put a gasoline-soaked tire around the poor person's body and then you set it alight. You can't escape. You burn to death in a flaming sea of burning rubber. That's a uniquely South African torture. And, the lady was onto a question there that she should have gone further with, which is, what makes you think it's okay to attack people like that? Or in this way? What makes you think it's okay? And the answer, we're very angry.
Oh, well, okay. As long as you're really angry.
That clears it up.
Yeah, I guess it's like the Antifa reasoning, right? They're very angry.
Yeah, but these guys make Antifa look like Cub Scouts.
Oh, yeah. So you could ask, given that we've played Julius Malema several times on previous shows, Julius Malema is the guy who dances on stage singing Kiss the Farmers. But the next clip is where he, as a guy with that reputation, actually acknowledges that South Africans are now worse off. Black South Africans are worse off than under apartheid. Clip 3B, please.
Of freedom is this, that 24 years into democracy, we are worse than the way we were during apartheid. The people want their land. The people want their wealth. They want to own.
Yeah, that's it. He'll go on about the rest of his demands, but that's the point. So there's the man himself, Mr. Monster himself, acknowledging that things are worse.
And why does he say that? I mean, what's the...
Because they are worse. There was never, there's a BBC clip, which I will find again, because it demonstrates so many points so brilliantly. It displays the attitude of the BBC in the face of an ordinary black South African simply wanting to tell them the truth and they will not accept the truth. And the black man is looking at the BBC reporter saying, maybe things will get better if the old government comes back. And the BBC guy says, what? You can't mean that those people treated you horribly and I don't know what else. And then the black man responds and says, yes, but we always had jobs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the point is the BBC kind of culture cannot process that statement. They don't understand how it can be that while South Africa had apartheid, how could it be that millions of black people from other countries streamed into the country to be there?
Yeah. Yeah, how bad was it?
Yeah, they cannot process it. It is such a shock to the system of a left liberal that the only thing they can do is to shut down any line of response in that general field, which is what the guy did. Okay, so what I have next for you is, you've heard what the attackers say.
We've got to take a really quick break, and then we'll come back. I don't want to cut that in half. We'll do it all together.
Okay.
Our guest is Dr. Harry Bouyans. We are discussing South Africa, and you're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Alrighty. Okay. So right back to it. The next clip you were going to play for us.
So I'm working my way through a sort of a picture that says, what are the foreigners saying? What are the attackers saying? Mm-hmm. So what is the view of the guy who hates all white people in South Africa? So now let's go to the attitude of the police. And I thought what we should do is play you a clip of Bongani Mkongi, who's the Deputy Minister of Police, and he was talking about foreigners and whites in 2017. The guy's still around in general. I'm not sure exactly what his job is today, but this is a clip from 2017, and listen to what this creature actually says, keeping in mind that he was Deputy Minister of Police. So this is the person to whom you have to look for your salvation if you are a foreigner or a white person in the country, okay? So that's clip four. I give you Bongani Mkongi.
South Africans have surrendered their own city to the foreign nationals. The nation should discuss that particular question. You won't find South Africans in other countries dominating a city into 80%. Because if we do not debate that, that necessarily means the whole South Africa could be 80% dominated by foreign nationals. And the future president of South Africa could be a foreign national. We are surrendering our land. And it is not xenophobia to talk truth. We fought for this land. From a white minority, we cannot surrender it to the foreign nationals.
Okay. So clearly, the word we does not include foreigners and white people. Okay. If you had any doubt as to how he looks at the world, there you got it. So let's see what is going on, because when you go and look at the crowds that are descending on these poor foreigners, the one thing that strikes you as a South African pretty much immediately is there's a very big Zulu component, and possibly all Zulu. The next thing that strikes you is they're all young males somewhere between about 18 and 35, or mostly that. The next thing that strikes you is that in Johannesburg, they are mostly from the so-called hostels. What are these hostels about? They are male residential hostels for commuting workers who commute typically from Zululand or other home territories, and then they come to the Rand area around Joburg where they work on the mines, or used to work on the mines, I mean, this government has reduced South Africa from number one gold producer to number eight. You can expect that the jobs are disappearing in the process. Now, so these folks, they grow up in Zululand, then they commute for 6 months, essentially, and they make some money. They send it back to the mother and the grandfather and the uncle and the aunt and the Lord knows the entire extended family. And they live in these hostels. And the present minister of police is himself a Zulu man, and his name is Bheki Cele. He's been around for a long time, and like most of these guys, he's been up on charges of corruption and fraud and all that kind of stuff. But he's what they got. And since he's got the credentials as a Zulu, he was asked to go and try and speak to these attackers. So I want you to listen to how he calls to this unruly crowd armed with, well, I got to explain what a knopkiri is. A knopkiri or knopkiri is essentially a walking stick cut from a piece of wood with a big fat knob at the one end, and you can fight somebody with that thing and crack his skull with it. So they're armed with knopkiris and machetes and all kinds of stuff like that. And this crowd is essentially dancing in front of him, because they dance when they're angry, they dance when they're happy, they dance when they're sad. Everything's expressed in dance. So this crowd is in front of him, and Bheki Cele calls out a Zulu order to them. Okay, and in this case, I'm afraid I'm not sure what he's saying, but listen how they respond as one man. It's important for you to pick that up. This is the Minister of Police talking to what is largely a Zulu mob, and listen to that single voice response. Clip 5. Okay. That's essentially it, you know. He calls out his one call in Zulu, and immediately you hear them respond as one man, okay? You will not get that from any other nation in South Africa. That's the Zulu.
Interesting.
Okay.
All right. Gotta
that's
take
the Zulu.
Do we have to take another quick break?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Time is flying.
It's on us again. No, we're lying. It's only 125, right?
That doesn't feel right. That's too quick.
I thought so, too. I thought, okay, I'm time traveling again, but the wrong direction. The good direction. Okay, keep going. So, never mind.
So the point I wanted to get across here is that while folks are attempting to deny it, there is a strong hostile and Zulu component to this, which means hordes of young men together who can be marshaled to go and do stuff and who, as you can hear, can respond to an order.
Well, the Zulu have quite the history. I mean, I think even the most, somebody who has no education on Africa at all, I think, you know, you say Zulu and everybody's like, oh, yeah, I think I know something about those guys.
Yeah. So I think the real question to ask is, where does this come from? Because no amount of stealing somebody else's job or anything can account for the behavior. This thing of burning people to death and carrying on, where does this come from?
Well, and the crazy part is, and we've discussed this, so I'm thinking about maybe somebody who hasn't heard any of the previous shows. The trick is they come in and, I mean, this is the great mistaken thought is that they're coming in and reclaiming their land, which is not true. And even when they, quote, reclaim it, okay, so they murder the farmer who's on the land, they don't stay there and farm it because they don't know how.
Correct.
So if they don't know how, they never did it in the first place, and they were never there. So those farms, you have detailed that nicely for us on previous programs, that land is just turning into nothingness and no productivity, yes. And eventually we'll have this big famine down there, and they'll all be starving, and blah, 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 and it's because they killed the people who grew all the food.
Well, you know, you can either listen to me or you can listen to a lady. One day I'll find that clip for you again where she explains what she would do if they got some of that land. And her answer is, I will keep a goat and I can keep some chickens and I'll have food.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. It. Problem solved.
There you go. It's not. You don't have to believe me. You can just listen to her.
Right.
Okay. This is the frustration of, you know, I don't quite know how to express this. I'm sorry. Let me put it to you like this, because I think we're going to be up against another little break just now. Peter Jackson, the guy who produced the movies Lord of the Rings and all that kind of stuff, he also did another movie about the First World War. And I don't think many people know about it. It's a documentary, obviously. And at the end, as the credits are playing, you hear the voice of men talking about what it was like when they came home. And the one explained that you try to tell your friends and your family what it was like, what it is like. And if they show any interest at all, they don't understand anything anyway.
Right.
And after a while, you give up. That's us. That's us South Africans right there. It's your very distant family. They live in America. You try so hard to explain to them. If they're interested at all, it becomes clear that it's so far away from them that they struggle to get their heads around it. And after a while, you just give up and you await your fate. Okay, and I'm not prepared to give up yet. And thank you for hearing me out on this, on all these calls.
No, well, we appreciate it because, honestly, this is something that Americans really should pay attention to. We're looking at these at similar types of propaganda, really, happening in this country on, you know, who belongs where, who really has claim, who's better than who, who's more special than who, and that never turns out well. It is historically never turned out well.
And
anywhere.
And who is always offended and who is okay to offend.
I totally forgot about that. That's right. All the wounded birds out there.
Yeah.
We wound them every Sunday. It's kind of awesome, actually. It's kind of our magic.
I don't know if it's a break yet, but the next thing I would like to do is, where does this come from? And I'm going to go to two time periods. The one is the 1980s, and the other one is 1816 to 1836.
Nice. All right, we'll do that right on the back side. We are here visiting with our guest, Dr. Harry Bouillons. We're discussing South Africa, and you're tuned in to We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Choosing your battle, pick yourself up and dust yourself off and back in the saddle. You're on the front line, everyone's watching. You know it's serious, we're getting closer, this isn't over. The pressure's on, you feel it, but you got it all, believe it. When you fold it up, oh, oh, and if you fold it up, eh, cause this is Africa.
It's interesting. That was the 2010 World Cup song that became really well known. But they were mad because the lady singing it doesn't come from South Africa. They liked the song, but they didn't like the song because she wasn't from there. She's from Colombia or something.
And she didn't sound South African to me.
No, she isn't.
Okay.
She can dance, though, so apparently they let her in.
Our question is, where does this unbelievable propensity for violence come from. It's like it's more than anywhere else on earth. I cannot think where it has been this bad that I've ever read about. And I submit it comes from two things. The one thing is from way back, a event known as the Mfecane that took 20 years. And it was when the Zulu nation got born and basically ran over everybody else in one half of the country and much further up north, all the way to the equator through various African countries. I will get back to that one. But in the near past, the relevant period is the 1980s. And I thought instead of me talking a hell of a lot, I could play you two clips. The intro to the first one is that in the period 1980 to 1990, 1,040 black people were set alight by other black people in South Africa by various means. Of those burnt like that, 320 survived. That's around 1 in 3. 541 people were necklaced using flaming gasoline-soaked tires.
Oh,
God. Of those, only 36 survived. Now, the clip number 6 is an ex-ANC operative of that era, a comrade, as he calls himself. This comrade is interviewed, and he tells about what happened with some of these necklacing events, and listen to him referring to a miracle. And remember that the police he's talking about are the old supposed apartheid police, the bad white guys, right? They weren't all white. Lots of black policemen, and some of them got necklaced. Some black soldiers were necklaced. So my comment to you is, here you have it from the horse's mouth, from an ANC guy, from a supposed comrade, okay, giving you what really happened. That's clip 6, please.
We have comrades today who can come and sit here like I'm sitting and testify to you how, by some miracle, they escaped a necklace, because the tire had already been hung around their neck, petrol had already been poured. The only thing that we needed was matches. And by some miracle, the police van came and they ran away and he escaped. Now, that...
So by some miracle, the police van came and he escaped being burned to death. Okay. So this is a comrade explaining how the evil white policeman came and saved another comrade. That's that era. So now let's look at some of the leading lights in promoting the necklacing. And I'm going to have you hear a very famous lady talk from the stage. It was in Munsieville in South Africa in 1984. And in April 86, this lady whom you've all heard of, and she was my boss at one point, she's doing the talking, and then you will have an explanation, not from me, you'll have it from your own ex-president, Ronald Reagan, a man for whom I had the deepest, deepest respect. So, clip 7, I give you Winnie Mandela, followed by Ronald Reagan.
Nelson Mandela is serving a term of life imprisonment for sabotage and advocating the overthrow of the South African government. His wife, Winnie Mandela, is able to speak to the media. For foreign consumption, she presents a picture of reasonableness and non-violence.
I have never personally believed in any violence, and no sane person can believe in any violence.
For home consumption...
With our necklaces, we shall liberate this country!
These hands, our power, the people's power!
In this barbaric way of reprisal, a tire is filled with kerosene or gasoline, placed around the neck of an alleged collaborator, and ignited. The victim may be a black policeman, a teacher, a soldier, a civil servant. It makes no difference. The atrocity is designed to terrorize blacks into ending all racial cooperation.
I thought it would be better coming from Ronald Reagan than from me.
Yeah, that's just horrendous.
So, if folks want to know where this comes from, it comes from the party now governing that country. Now you know why Reagan and Daddy Bush, who was then the deputy, the vice president, they put the ANC on the United States Department of State terrorist list, the international list of terrorist organizations. The ANC was entirely correctly put up there after Reagan had made these statements. So the country is living under the thumb of a terrorist organization. What on earth did people expect?
And so when did the ANC come off of the terrorist watch list? I got a pretty good idea, but...
Yeah. Sonny Bush took him off.
No kidding.
2008. One of the parting shots before he left office is to keep Condoleezza Rice happy. She felt uncomfortable with having to deal with South Africa while its government is on the terrorist list. So he took her off. You know, I didn't really have a war with Dabia, but that's the moment that I realized he wasn't the sharpest pencil in the box.
Yeah, no kidding. And then the ANC has basically been in charge ever since then.
Yes. Now, this is probably the point at which I should raise that date of 2008 again. I said earlier that people refer to the fact that much of the xenophobia stuff started after 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened just before that that was significant in South Africa? Oh, of course. Jacob Zuma, the first Zulu to be president. We got a Zulu president just before that, and the next moment, all this stuff started. Okay, so if you, in a cynical view of recent South African history, the comment would be, when the reign of white folks was terminated in 1994, the first other nation to control things were the Amakosa under Mandela. Mandela was essentially a Xhosa. So was Mbeki. And then in 2007, Zuma pushed Mbeki out. And between 2008 and 2018, the country was ruled over by essentially a Zulu kind of culture with Zulu values. And there you go. I have the greatest respect for the Zulu as a people who can, few people on earth can mobilize themselves like the Zulu. You heard them following orders there earlier. People can dance around the fact, but much of this present mess is Zulu instigated. And as a grouping, the Zulu are not thrilled about having been pushed off the carcass of white civilization. They've had only 8 years at the carcass. They figure they need more. That's the way many people read it. So, you know, the Amakosa had the period from 94 until 2008. The Zulu haven't had 14 years. They've had 10 years. So maybe some of these figure they need a longer chance to eat, you know, like the hyena push the lion off the kill or vice versa. It's only when the two big ones have finished eating that the jackals and the vultures can get their piece. And so the Zulu figure they haven't finished. It's not time for the vultures and the jackal yet.
Mm.
And that's the picture that lots of folks have of the situation, that they look at this and they shake their heads, and all you can do is pray and hope that the end, when it comes, will be quick. So
let's take one more quick break, and then we'll come back and finish out the top of the hour with our guest, Dr. Harry Billions. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Tomorrow. All around me are familiar faces, worn out places, worn out faces, frightened a little for their daily races, going nowhere, their tears are filling up their glasses, no expression, no expression. At my head I want to drown my sorrow, but tomorrow, but tomorrow. And I find it kind of funny, I find it kind of sad, the dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had. I find it hard to tell you, cause I find it hard to take, when people run in circles, it's a very
I always have to play that song when we talk about South Africa, because it is a mad world. So, okay, Harry, in our last 10 minutes, what do we miss?
I would like to do the last little bit about the so-called Mfokane back in the 1816 to 1836. And when I read you just a little section, and then you tell me if you see the connection.
Okay.
Are you guys there?
We are. Sorry.
Okay. Go ahead.
We were listening quietly.
back in 1816, when the Zulu nation arose, they were led by a guy called Shaka, a very able military leader, trained the guys well. He created the Zulu in every aspect. And time moved on, and he was murdered by one of the usual stream of half-brothers. Because the king has many wives, right? So there's always a production of a line of half-brothers. And number one half-brothers. Number two doesn't count, really. So Shaka had was another one that was supposed to inherit the kingdom, but Shaka had him knocked off. So Shaka became the chief. Shaka, a little bit later, he was killed by Ndengane. And it's Ndengane who would end up fighting the white folks. But the following is the description of matters before the whites got there. There was a split between Ndengane and one of his lieutenants, and that lieutenant was in charge of the Kumalu people. His name was Mtsilikazi. And Mtsilikazi was any bit as bloodthirsty and competent as Ndengane. He was clever enough to flee with his followers, defeat a couple of other tribes, absorb them, turn them into good Zulus, and then he fell upon the Tswana people who lived in the interior of South Africa. The Tswana are a relatively peaceful people. There's none of this sort of martial kind of culture of the Zulu. So this now is Robert Moffat, the missionary of the London Missionary Society. I believe I'm quoting my enemy, so Robert Moffat is not my friend in history. This is his description of the Matabele, who are Zulus. He says, "Thus, when they conquered a town, the terrified inhabitants were driven in a mass to the outskirts, when the parents and all the married women were slaughtered on the spot. Such as dared to brave in the defense of their town, their wives and their children, are reserved for a still more terrible death. Dry grass saturated with fat is tied around their naked bodies and then set on fire." Mm. Well, it occurs to me they didn't have tires and gasoline back then. Mm. The youths and girls are loaded as beasts of burden with the spoils of the town to be marched to the homes of the victors. If the town be an isolated position, the helpless infants are either left to perish with hunger or to be devoured by the beasts of prey. Should a suspicion arise in the savage bosom that these helpless innocents may fall into the hands of friends, they will prevent this by collecting them into a fold and, after raising over them a pile of brushwood, apply the flaming torch to it, when the town, lately the scene of mirth, becomes a heap of ashes.
Wow.
And there is something special in the last words of Mtsilikazi to Moffat, the man who's just done all this that you heard. Mtsilikazi calls out to Moffat as Moffat gets on his wagon to ride away. Mtsilikazi says, "Pray to your God to keep me from the power of Dengan," the guy he fled from. Okay. So none of this is new, guys. It's just, you know, the gasoline is way back when it was fat. Now it's gasoline. Way back when it was grass. Now it's tires. But you ask me, where does this unbelievable violence come from? I just give you the old missionaries' words about what they wrote, what they saw, what happened, etc. I just figure, you know, you want to understand stuff, go back a little bit in history and stop acting like everything is new. Mm-hmm. So this is where we are. And before the folks from Zimbabwe and Nigeria and Burundi get all high and mighty and try to find high ground, don't let me start with them, because I'm going to tell them what their grandpappy did. So, it's Africa. It's vicious. It's violent. And its appetite for violence is just beyond what the Northern European or North American culture can process. This is it. Welcome to Africa.
So yeah, it's nothing new. This is basically a cultural.
But it's interesting because if you look in this country, you know, three or six or seven or, you know, say fewer than a dozen people are killed at a mall or something, which is obviously horrible and ridiculous and senseless. And yet you find out the same day in Chicago, 50 people were shot. And a whole bunch of them died. And yet that just gets glossed over. And so maybe this kind of stuff that's happening in South Africa, you know, that's our precursor to those kinds of horrible things. You just start ignoring it. You know, just not talk about it. You know, what is it? Baltimore. You know, all the things going on in Baltimore. Well, you know, we had the mayor of New York City. You know, Tucker Carlson asked him the other night about all the rats and everything. Oh, it's the cleanest it's ever been. We have the lowest crime. It's super clean. People love it. It's awesome.
Say it enough times, it'll be true.
It's never been better. What are you talking about?
Well, I did read to you, I think, on the last show we had, the little bit by that young Frenchman, Lavelin. Remember when he said, he was riding on a horse in 1782 in the Eastern Cape of South Africa. And he said, "In every part where the natives live entirely unconnected with the whites, their manners are mild and amiable. On the contrary, an acquaintance with Europeans alters and corrupts their natural character, which amazingly degenerates." He, at least he has the decency to add the adjective amazingly. I bet it is amazingly. I mean, there's just a thing in the liberal mind that does not connect. It cannot process reality. It is a reality machine. From an engineering black box perspective, anything you put into a liberal mind will get screwed up.
That's astrophysics at its finest.
No, but seriously, you know, there's all these cute little management experiments you can do. You sit people at a row of chairs and then you let them function like a business. One guy is producing, another guy is making sales, et cetera, et cetera. And then you inject some or other disruption in there, and you see how these guys start to oscillate, and they ring like a guitar, you know, it's just noise signals up and down, and after a while it settles down again. You can do that kind of thing. You can treat people, collections of people, like an engineering black box, because I can simulate that behavior with an inductor, a capacitor, and a resistor. And that's it. I need just three components in electronic engineering to show you what happens to a bunch of people at a heap. And I'm telling you that if you put anything into a box marked liberal, you put in a clean square signal on the one, or a perfect sinusoidal signal on the left-hand side, what comes out on the other side is completely warped.
Well, and you've given ample examples, you know, today. So I realize we're not going to fix South Africa. Oh yeah, spoiler alert here in the last 2 minutes. We're not fixing South Africa on this program because it's kind of a heavy, kind of a heavy lift. Oh yeah, we're out of time. That's it. We had the fix. We just didn't have time. But honestly, this is just continuing to go downhill.
Yeah, and you're right. There is really no solution on the horizon right now. It's spiraling down.
And sucking in more pieces. I mean, it's not limiting itself to South Africa.
The good thing about this last week is that other African countries have become outraged. It's so bad. It's so bad that other countries in Africa are upset. And the unique thing about Ghana is that Ghana was the first black African sub-Sahara country to get independence. They started learning earliest. Today, the Ghanaians have produced people who are proper economists, and like George Aite. He's trained people like Dambisa Moyo, who's Zambian, but she was his student. That makes at least two people in Black Africa who can think about economics. And they're asking questions like, you know, but don't people want to work? Don't they understand they have to work? And you hear the ordinary Ghanaian saying, you know, these people should work. So you don't have to spend too much time on the people from Ghana to get them to behave. But in South Africa, it's a lost cause.
Yeah. And as long as the rest of the world ignores it and or feeds it, it'll continue to spiral downhill. So honestly, like everything else, education is always really the key, and that is one thing the rest of us can do out here is spread the word and help them get smart.
The ANC told them to burn their schools down.
Yeah, that's not good. All right, we're out. Sorry, Harry. We got to do this again. We got to have part 12. Thanks a million. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.